Well, welcome everybody. Welcome to today's episode of The Law of Self-Defense, a particularly unfortunate episode. I am, of course, attorney Andrew Branca for The Law of Self-Defense, and we are here to talk about this event. A warrant being served on a bad dude in Charlotte, North Carolina, turns into a gunfight. Bad dude had long guns and handguns, apparently took a position on the second story of a house, firing down on the officer serving the warrant on him, shot eight of them, killed four of them. So we're here to talk about this event. I hate to even mention the shooter's name, but I suppose it's necessary. When we get to that, we are going to take a look at a couple of news reports. Unfortunately, the official press releases are completely lame, so we have to rely on news media reports of what's going on. And let me just make sure that, yes, this is correct. So we'll take a look at a few questions today, and of course, whatever questions the law self-defense members ask, but certainly things like, is it ever lawful to shoot at police officers? Believe it or not, sometimes it can be. Should felons get their gun rights back after they've served their sentence? This shooter, in this case, was a convicted felon, long criminal history, as we'll see, but was released out of prison. And what else? What about serving warrants on a person's home as opposed to waiting on them until they go run an errand? Which is more advisable? As we'll see, whatever you do, it's always the wrong answer if what you did turns out to have a bad outcome. There'll always be armchair quarterbacking. All right, so with that out of the way, let's go ahead and start the formal launch of today's show. And today's show is brought to you by The Law of Self-Defense itself in the form of our best-selling book, The Law of Self-Defense Principles, your handbook to being hard to convict if you're ever compelled to use force in defense of yourself, your family, your property. Check it out on Amazon. 5-star rated, 1,500 reviews, a bestseller in its category on Amazon. But don't buy it on Amazon. They'll charge you for the book and shipping and handling. We'll give you the book for free. We only ask that you cover the cost of shipping the book to you. And you can get this book at lawofselfdefense.com/freebook. Simple enough. Or scan that QR code there on the screen. And I'll leave that link up below my name here throughout the show as well. lawofselfdefense.com/freebook. All right. Let's take a look at what we have. Get some facts in this case before we dive into. Questions and hypotheticals and scenarios that we do as a form of legal analysis. By the way, if I seem a little off today, folks. So last Saturday, I finally made it back to jiu-jitsu. I'd been out of the gym for almost 2 months. Now, this was a planned, partly planned absence. I wasn't just slacking, but I had a court case to follow, and I had some client matters to take care of. That took about a month. And then I got this cold that still isn't fully resolved. But it was about a month of that before I felt comfortable going back to the gym. I was confident I was no longer infectious and so forth. So Saturday I go, have a great time, and get home. And no sooner do I get home than I'm bringing the garbage out from the kitchen, and I manage to smash my foot into the side of my house so hard that I broke my toe. Of course, I wasn't wearing shoes. So since Saturday, I've had a broken toe, and it's broken for sure. I mean, my foot, half my foot turned black and blue. There's not much you can do for a broken toe unless it's, you know, pointed sideways, which this isn't, except tape it up to the other toes and try to take it easy. And it's been great fun limping around for the last few days. But because of that, of course, I have not been in jiu-jitsu like I planned. Again, this week, another week, I'm going to be out. I'm not very happy about it. All right, so new details emerge after four law enforcement officers killed in shooting in Charlotte, North Carolina. New details emerged the day after police said four law enforcement officers were killed and four others were wounded in a shooting in Charlotte, North Carolina. Of course, this all happened on Monday. The shooting happened on Monday. While trying to serve a warrant Monday afternoon, a suspect was killed in a shootout with police. Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Chief Johnny Jennings said a U.S. Marshals Service fugitive task force comprised of officers from multiple agencies. That's perfectly normal, of course. Was attempting to serve an arrest warrant on a man for possession of a firearm by a convicted felon in East Charlotte when the shooting started. The chief called the shooting an absolute tragic day for the city of Charlotte and for the profession of law enforcement. Yeah, four dead cops. And others are still in the hospital. We certainly hope they'll survive, but I guess the number of fatalities could go up. When officers approached a house to arrest the suspect, they were immediately met with gunfire and they returned fire. So apparently this bad dude, his name is Hughes, saw the cops coming to his house. Now, I have a little bit of video of a couple of the cops hiding behind a car, taking fire, shooting back. And they're geared up. They have long guns. They've got, chest rigs on. With spare magazine. So, they're not going to look like anything except cops serving a high risk warrant. There's indication that the suspect saw them coming. Right. Police said officers called for backup and they continued to exchange fire with the suspect. More gunfire came from inside the house as officers approached the suspect, setting off a long standoff. Now, maybe one of the law enforcement officers can tell me. I can't believe this is what the house looked like before all the shooting started, but this is not the result of ARs being fired into the house or out through the house. Does this mean they drove a Bearcat up and smashed in the front of the house? I mean, that would kind of make sense, but there's really no indication of that having happened in anything I've seen. But people could not possibly have been living in this house in this condition, I would think. Continuing, the man then left the house while armed. Police said an officer opened fire and shot him in the front yard where he was pronounced dead. He was identified by police as Terry Clark Hughes Jr., 39. We do have a photo of Mr. Hughes to share with all of you. Jennings said the suspect used an AR-15 style rifle and a 40 caliber handgun and had additional ammo for both guns. Police were looking into how he acquired the guns because he was a convicted felon. How had he acquired the guns? I wonder. Anybody wonder how a convicted felon? I mean, surely he didn't pass a background check, right? We have laws against convicted felons being in possession of guns. I don't know why he didn't obey the law. When the standoff was over, a female and a 17-year-old were found inside the house and were brought to a police station as persons of interest. Now, I presume the female is adult. Anybody want to bet that she's the one who bought the guns for her man? That she passed the background check because she's not a felon? Because that is one of the most common ways that felons manage to get their hands on guns. They steal them. They buy them out of the trunks of cars. Or they get their girlfriends to buy them on their behalf. Straw man purchases. I can tell you that when I worked as a diesel mechanic in Harlem, New York City, and then as now, it was impossible to get a concealed carry permit if you were a normal person. Just about every week, we'd have a car pull into our yard, pop the trunk, and have all kinds of stuff for sale. Car stereos, speakers for your car, and guns. Always guns. No background check. No excise tax. No paperwork to fill out. Now, of course, I never took advantage of that opportunity. I'm a law-abiding citizen, but it was presented. And there were mechanics in our shop who did take advantage. So a female and a 17-year-old were found inside the house and were brought to a police station as persons of interest. A later statement said both individuals were female and that they had exited the home following negotiations with a SWAT team. Investigators were trying to determine what happened inside the residence. Police initially believed there were two shooters involved in the incident, including the individual killed in the initial shooting. But the chief said Tuesday he's not ready to say there was a second shooter. The two persons of interest are fully cooperating with the investigation and haven't been charged. The suspect was shooting at the officers from the upstairs of the house. The chief said, even though our officers were trying to take cover, they were at a disadvantage because the suspect was up at a higher level and they were trying to return fire from a lower position to an elevated position. The suspect may also have fired at the officers after he was shot outside the house. Eight officers in total were shot. And I have the names of all the officers in a separate article, so I'll go over them there. The officers died as heroes. And more talk about the officers. But I have details elsewhere I can share with all of you, including their names and photos. President Biden spoke. Merrick Garland spoke. Of course, for them, this will be just another reason to disarm law-abiding people. And a neighbor. Okay, I have a second article here as well. This is about the suspect on whom the warrant was being served. A law-abiding, upstanding member of the community, do you imagine? Did his background checks, filled out his paperwork, followed whatever the local gun laws are in North Carolina, I don't know, safe storage, whatever they may have on the books, magazine capacity limits. I've never lived in North Carolina. I never had to worry about it. But I'm sure this guy never even had so much as a speeding ticket in his life, right? As clean a background as Kyle Rittenhouse. Or maybe not. Man who fatally shot four officers had extensive criminal history, police chief says. The man who fatally shot four law enforcement officers and wounded four others in East Charlotte on Monday had been convicted of crimes across the state. Terry Clark Hughes Jr., 39 years old, spent time in prison in 2011 and 2013. In all, Hughes faced 49 criminal charges since 2001. In Mecklenburg County, he was charged with misdemeanors and felonies in recent years, including felony manufacturing marijuana and possession of marijuana with intent to sell in 2021. The latter charge was dismissed earlier this month, according to court records. For a guy who's had 49 criminal charges since 2001, why would you ever dismiss a charge against that guy? I don't care what it is. Still, at a news conference Tuesday, Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Chief Johnny Jennings said Hughes may not have been known to officers as particularly dangerous when they went to serve him warrants. Well, they may not have known him personally, but they knew the warrants they were serving. It was two warrants. One is for felon in possession of firearms, and the other was for felony fleeing to elude. So he'd outrun a police pursuit, an automobile police pursuit prior. That's a dangerous dude. He's got guns and he doesn't follow orders. And he'll engage in high-speed flight in an automobile. You know that's a dangerous dude. That's why the cops showed up with the chest rigs and the body armor and the long guns and so many of them. I think there were 12 in the initial team, 8 of whom got shot, 4 killed. Hughes fired at least 100 rounds from a high-powered rifle. This would be the AR. I mean, obviously not really a high-powered rifle if you know anything about rifles, but nevertheless. At officers who were outside the home he was in, Hughes was in an upstairs room during the standoff. In response to a question about whether the officers were familiar with Hughes, the chief said, not that I'm aware of. Each CMPD division has individuals that they obviously encounter quite a bit and that they know of personally. I do know he had an extensive criminal history. I do not know the familiarity the division officers had with him, how long he lived at that address, so I don't have that answer for you today. If they didn't know him personally, they knew what kind of dude they were going to be dealing with, right? In a press release Monday, the police said Hughes was wanted for possession of a firearm by a felon and two counts of felony fleeing to elude out of Lincoln County. That'll be one of the reasons the marshals were involved. Hughes also had a warrant for his arrest from charges in Person County near the Virginia border. According to court records, he pleaded guilty to felony breaking and entering in 2010 and served about 5 months in prison. And then we let him out again. In 2021, he was charged with possession of a firearm by a felon. He never showed up to court during his scheduled hearing last year. Last year was 2023. It took him from 2021, when he was caught with the gun, a felon in possession, until his court date. That seems weird. And then it like wasn't an arrest warrant issued by the prosecutor. I mean, this would have been a bench warrant issued by a judge just because he didn't show up in the courtroom when he was supposed to. Hughes also had two orders for his arrest for missed court appearances in Mecklenburg County. One followed his failure to appear on a charge of fleeing to elude arrest, and the other stemmed from his failure to appear for possession of marijuana. Hughes had a slew of other charges dismissed. Charges that were dismissed in Mecklenburg County include manufacturing marijuana, possession of marijuana, possession of drug paraphernalia, driving with a license revoked. I wonder why that happened. All from 2021. Asked at the news conference if Hughes should have been freed out in society with normal law-abiding people, the chief said he could cite hundreds of examples of people who should not be out preying on our citizens. And I've been pretty vocal about that, particularly with juveniles. Well, this guy's 39 and still a bad dude. He didn't calm down. I will say the system is not completely where it needs to be. No kidding, Chief. It's obviously fundamentally broken. But we have so many people involved. We're overwhelmed. We're overwhelmed in the court system. I don't have an answer. You know what's a good answer? If you take this guy with his first felony and you keep him locked up for 10 or 15 years, then he's not cycling through the system 49 times, is he, Chief? The very problem is that you kick him loose. And then, of course, he comes back like through a revolving door. Dozens of times. If you want crime to go down, folks, you got to lock bad people up and keep them there. And I know, then the pendulum swings and everybody whines about over-incarceration and institutional racism and school-to-prison culture. The alternative is you have dudes like this on the street. Choose your opponent. The chief says, but I can tell you that I am focused on holding people accountable for the crimes they commit, whether that means incarceration, probation, or fine. But of course, the sheriff doesn't make those decisions. I mean, he can place people under arrest, but then they get handed over to the court system and the prosecutor and the judges. And, of course, public defenders. And they make the decisions about how serious a charge a person will be tried on, whether they'll be sentenced to incarceration or probation or even just fined, or just have the charges dismissed. That's not up to the chief. There's a lot of people to be held to blame for the level of crime in our society today. And then, of course, they want to disarm us, the law-abiding majority of the population, because we'll obey those gun laws, I presume. Not like Mr. Hughes. Okay, so that's about it there. And this is this is Mr. Hughes. This is the four officers who were killed. Three of the officers killed were members of the U.S. Marshal Fugitive Task Force. Sam Polok, sorry if I mispronounced that, to Mr. Polok's family, and Alden Elliott of the North Carolina Department of Adult Corrections, and Thomas Weeks, a deputy U.S. Marshal. A fourth victim, Joshua Iyer, was an officer with the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department. You think these folks made a positive contribution to their community? You think they had 49 felony charges felony, misdemeanor, some combination against them over a 15, 20 year period since his whole life, basically. I mean, 49 charges since like 2001, right? So that's 22 years ago. He's 39. Hughes was 39 when he was finally killed in this gunfight. So his whole adult life, he's been nothing but a criminal, often a felony criminal. And of course, we can speculate that his criminal behavior began much, much younger. But of course, we wouldn't have access to those juvenile criminal records. Now, I do have video here. It's not very good video, but it's what I have. It's about 5 minutes long. I first saw a much shorter clip, about a minute long clip of this, and I presumed that it was body worn camera of an officer who was taking cover in this apparent doorway here. It's not. It's actually being filmed by the occupant. At least I don't think it is. I think it's being filmed by the occupant of the home who's at that doorway and apparently would like to get their keys out of this car so they can go to work in the midst of a gunfight. I don't get it either, folks, but that is what she says she's interested in doing. So let me go ahead and play this because it's what we have. There's not much action. This is the angle throughout. I will encourage you to pay attention to the backdrop here. There is the gentleman here on the left with his dark hat. It's very hard to see here, but just above his hat in the background, there's a chain link fence, and there's another gentleman at that chain link fence, which is not great. I mean, I'm not sure what he's doing there, to be honest with you. It provides neither cover nor concealment. You may as well just be standing up in the yard. I don't get it. And by the way, listen, I don't want to criticize. I don't claim expertise in firearms tactics, right? I've had more than my share of training through being an adjunct at the Sig Sauer Academy for 10 or 15 years. They let me take whatever courses I took, but I've never done this as a profession. Had to handle firearms in a tactical manner and exchange gunshots with a bad dude hunkered down in the house. But that car door is going to do nothing to stop a 5.56 round, not to mention the glass. The only real, and the glass obviously doesn't provide any concealment, the only real cover from this vehicle is behind the engine block. Maybe the tires? And I wouldn't want to be looking over the top like that. I'd look around the corners, folks. Things skim along the top of flat surfaces. So, here we go.
My back up. Oh, shit. Jimmy, open the door. Oh, man. Jimmy, open my door.
Folks, you couldn't pay me enough money in the world to be standing in that doorway filming this. No way. I mean, I presume I'm not going to get engaged in that gunfight, right? The cops, they don't need a stranger, small town lawyer running around with his own gun. But if I'm not doing that, I'm definitely not hanging out in the doorway where I can catch a stray round. I mentioned the guy by the chain link fence. You'll also see movement, two or three people moving through the trees behind him. On the other side of that, it appears to be on the other side of that fence. I presume those are other members of the task force.
Moving over here.
Looks to me like the guy by the fence got hit. Looks to me like he got hit. I don't know what he was doing. Let me rewind it a little bit. He goes down quick. I know it's hard to see. I don't think I can make it any bigger. No. If I'd noticed that before, I would have produced a version of this. Let me see if I can. No, it's not going to work. Long video. I'm going to see if I can quickly produce a clip that I can enlarge for everybody. A little on the fly video post-production. Yeah, that doesn't look good. All right. This should only take a second, folks. Up, 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 up. It's exporting. All right, so this is zoomed in now. We can more clearly see this guy at the fence line. I don't know what he thinks he's doing. It looks like he might have a pistol out. I guess it could. He could have a long gun out. It's kind of hard to tell. His left forearm is extended for sure. But he's just standing in the open. I mean, that's crazy to me. And it looks like it has a bad outcome.
Moving over here.
Yep, that doesn't look good. Is he moving? Okay, I'm going to go back to the other version. But that looks not good.
Moving over here.
Jimmy, I cannot go. My truck. I try to go work. My truck. My key in the truck.
This person's trying to go to work. By the way, folks, and those of you who are veterans, I'll let you speak to this in the comments. I've never served, but most of us, even just like me, we've all heard the phrase shoot, move, communicate, right? There's almost nothing happening here. There's no movement. There's no communication that I can tell, except between these two dudes here. I don't know what's going on with radios. There's no coordination. They got 12 guys. At least they started with 12 guys. And there's hardly any shooting. And there may not be much shooting because you don't have a target to shoot at, but that's why you shoot, move, and communicate. I mean, just saying, anyone who's even done paintball, you know that just hunkering down in one spot is going to get you shot. Yeah, the guy who got shot by the fence, maybe he's sitting up. I wouldn't do that. I mean, unless he's capable of movement. If he's not capable of movement, I would just be acting as dead as I could act. All right, so now they were on their radios right then. I mean, this really bothers me, these guys just sitting here. And again, I'm no expert on this stuff. But the bad dude is in his house on the second floor. He's got interior lines of communication. He can move from side to side in that house behind cover, or at least concealment, and take pot shots in whatever direction he wants. And these guys are just sitting here.
He's looking at us.
This is a residential community, so there's lots of little homes. Looks like a little, I don't know, 1,000, 1,200 square foot home, something like that. Of course, they are shooting up into the home. So, you know, 5.56 rounds, which is, I presume, what they're shooting. You know, I mean, a house will stop a 5.56 round. Okay, that's the whole video. And I haven't seen much of anything else to share with you folks. So, just once more, these are the officers who lost their lives. Three of the officers killed were members of the U.S. Marshal Fugitive Task Force, Sam Polok and Alden Elliott of the North Carolina Department of Adult Corrections, and Thomas Weeks, a deputy U.S. Marshal. A fourth victim, Joshua Iyer, was an officer with the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department. All right, so let's let's get to the questions that I had proposed. And while I do that, I'll remind everybody that after we discuss my questions, I will turn to the questions or comments from the Law of Self-Defense membership. At that point, I will probably stop the live streams on YouTube, Twitter, and Rumble and just continue with the member live stream. The good news is it's really easy and dirt cheap to be a law of self-defense member. You can try it out for 2 weeks for just 99 cents. A trial membership at lawofselfdefense.com/trial. Or scan that QR code right there. So for 99 cents, you'll immediately be sent an email explaining how you can join us on the live stream for today's show and every other show that we do and get all your questions and comments answered for free. After the two-week trial, it's still dirt cheap, folks. It's only about 30 cents a day, less than $10 a month to be a law of self-defense member. Not a bad deal. You get all your questions and comments answered for free. You get transcripts of every show. You get access to the video clip I just played, whatever special content there might be for any particular show. So especially those of you who are interested in this content at a higher level, you may be a self-defense instructor. This is all useful for course materials and education and for everybody, for documenting what you've learned so that it's admissible in court if you ever find yourself compelled to make use of this insight, knowledge, expertise in making decisions in defense of yourself, your family, your property. All right, so I proposed three questions. One, is the suspect's home the safest place to secure their arrest? Well, it's always the wrong answer, folks. Whatever you choose, it's the wrong answer. If you have a bad outcome, they will say you chose poorly. When Kim Potter was making her arrest, Kim Potter, the taser lady, during a traffic stop, where she unintentionally used her service pistol and killed the suspect they were trying to arrest, she was chastised by the state expert witness for police practices, a gentleman that goes by the name of Stoughton. He's become a plague on these police use of force trials. He told the court that a reasonable officer would just have let that suspect drive away, not used any degree of force to compel lawful arrest, compliance with lawful arrest, because they'd looked at his driver's license and they could find him at home and they could pick him up at home and at their leisure. So they didn't need to have a confrontation, any use of force on the side of the road during the traffic stop. Of course, then when they go to the house, we have a scenario like this where the bad guy has his long guns with him and he's barricaded and he's in an elevated position and he has interior lines of communication. And you end up with a train wreck like this. And now people will be saying, well, why didn't you just wait for that guy to get in his car and drive to the grocery store and pick him up along the way? Anybody remember the Miami bank robbery stop from the 1980s, which induced the FBI to switch over to initially 10 millimeter pistols and then 40 Smith & Wesson? There were these two bad dudes who were making a series of bank robberies along a major road in Florida, lots of little banks, and this was what they did for a living. So every few days, they'd hit another bank, and it was a serious enough problem that a task force was set up, much like this, that would cruise up and down this major roadway, keeping their eye out for bank robbers. And they spotted these two dudes, and they compelled to stop. And those dudes got out of their cars. They had long guns with them. They had pistols with them. One of them was mortally wounded almost immediately by an FBI bullet to the heart. And he still managed to kill multiple FBI agents after being mortally wounded. A lot of special agents died that day on that road during that traffic stop. Of course, then we have the case of David Koresh, right? Where they went to his compound in Waco, Texas to arrest him. And a huge gunfight ensued. And a bunch of men, women, and children got burned alive for apparently no very good reason. And then everyone says, well, that was a bad outcome. So therefore you should have just picked him up when he was on the road going about. He was in town on a regular basis. The sheriff could just pick him up. And there was no indication, by the way, that he would have forcibly resisted arrest if he'd been stopped out on the street. Now, some people think that in that case, the federal government was trying to make a statement by doing a mass invasion of David Koresh's religious compound in Waco, Texas. And that wouldn't surprise me in the least. But the bottom line is, whether or not you try to pick him up on the street or pick him up at his house or pick him up at the gym or pick him up wherever, If you have a bad outcome, they'll say you did it wrong and you should have made the other decision. And who drives the bad outcome? It's not the police officers making the stop, folks. It's the suspect. The suspect determines how much force is ultimately used in that encounter. Let me take a look at... No, I'll cover these two, and then I'll start with the law of self-defense questions. Can it ever be lawful to shoot at police? The surprising answer may be yes, it can be lawful to shoot at police. For one thing, if you reasonably perceive them as being unlawful actors. Now, you're not allowed to use any degree of force to resist a lawful arrest. But what if you don't know it's a lawful arrest? What if it's a no-knock warrant and your front door is being kicked in? And it's not apparent to you, and it wouldn't be apparent to a reasonable person in your circumstances, that these are law enforcement officers serving a warrant. In particular, if you're a normal law-abiding person and they're at the wrong address, might it not look to you and to any reasonable person in those circumstances like a violent home invasion? And if you carry your gun on your person when you're home, as I would recommend you do, might in less than a second you have that gun up and be engaging those apparent home invaders with fire, with gunshots. And then afterwards, you discover they were police sent to the wrong address. Was that a lawful shoot in self-defense, defense of highly defensible property, your castle? Yes, that argument can be made. Now, the argument's much harder to make if you're a dude like Mr. Hughes in this case, and you've got 49 criminal charges over the last couple decades, including a bunch of felonies. And you know you're a felon in possession. You know you're not making your court appearances. You know warrants are issued for those crimes and non-appearances. So you have good reason to suspect that the police are going to come to your house with a warrant someday. Eventually, they'll get around to it. Be hard for you to imagine that you thought it was just a home invasion. Still comes up. That argument still comes up, even with bad guys, especially if they're drug dealers. Because drug dealers are quite frequently the victims of home invasions by other bad dudes. Because what do drug dealers have that bad dudes like? They got a bunch of drugs, a bunch of money, usually a bunch of guns. So sometimes a bad guy who fires a police serving a no-knock warrant on his house will say, hey, I thought that was an enemy gang. I didn't know it was police. And I had good reason to believe it was an enemy gang because I have a deadly force confrontations with enemy gangs all the time. What if you know it's the police? So you know it's the police kicking in your front door. You know it's cops. Can you shoot at them then? Well, not if they're engaged in lawful police duties. But I recall a case, I think it might have been from the 1980s or 90s in New York City, where there was a bad dude who got into a gunfight with a bunch of cops in a... basically in an apartment building. He was in the elevator, if I recall correctly. The cops were lined up in the hallway, and a big gunfight happens. And he shoots a bunch of cops, and the cops fire a bunch of shots at him, and he gets caught, and he gets tried. And he says, yeah, I knew there were cops when I was shooting at them. But these are bad cops. This was a hit by the police. They were there to execute me. They were not there to do anything lawful. These are bad cops who go around unlawfully executing people like me. These are Punisher cops. And he got acquitted with that argument. Sold it to a jury. There could be circumstances where an officer is arguably using excessive force to make the arrest. I've seen those cases argued where... the officer is attempting to arrest somebody for, I don't know, walking on a highway shoulder when he's not supposed to be doing that. And the suspect makes a small amount of physical resistance, noncompliance with the arrest. And then the suspect says, well, then he just pulled his gun out and he tried to shoot me. Under circumstances in which the cop's use of deadly force would be unlawful. So I fought with him over the gun so I wouldn't get unlawfully killed. Those arguments can be made as well. Here's the catch, though. Of course, there could also be scenarios where someone's pretending to be a cop, right? We see those sometimes. The occasional mass killer will lull his victims into complacency by presenting as a police officer. Every once in a while, there's some wacko out there in public who dresses up like a cop and makes traffic stops and I guess that's their weird thing. So maybe they're not a cop at all. Maybe you have reason to believe they're not really a police officer. Those arguments really only work if it actually turns out that they're in fact not a police officer. If you conclude, I don't think this guy's a cop and I'm not going to treat him like one and I'm going to fight what he wants, and then it turns out he's actually a cop, that narrative is not going to work for you. Yeah, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend shot one of the cops. Breonna Taylor was a young black woman who was, I think, dating the drug dealer whose apartment was served with a warrant by police. It was a no-knock warrant, but we know that, in fact, the cops did knock because we have witnesses from adjacent apartments who testified they heard the cops announce themselves. But anyway, a gunfight ensued between the drug dealer inside the apartment and the cops coming in, and the drug dealer shot one of the cops. And the cops returned fire, and one or more of their rounds, hit and killed Breonna Taylor. I believe the charges against the drug dealer for shooting the cop were dismissed. Now, they might have been dismissed on the merits. He may have had a credible argument that he thought he was being subject to a home invasion, or it might have been dismissed for political reasons as an ancillary accommodation because of the drama around the death of Breonna Taylor. All right. Should a felon who has served their time regain their gun rights? Now, the answer, my personal answer to this, my philosophical answer, is yes and no. Even the founding fathers did not intend the Second Amendment to allow for the unlawful use of firearms. And if someone acts as a violent criminal, their use of firearms is unlawful in that context. They would not have a Second Amendment privilege to keep and bear arms for the purpose of committing violent crimes on other law-abiding people. So even under the founders' conception, almost certainly if someone was a felon, just found guilty by a jury of certainly violent felon conduct, they wouldn't have a Second Amendment right any more than they'd have a constitutional right to liberty of movement, right? We're going to put them in a cell. Or their right to life. If the crime was bad enough, execution was common in the colonial period. You lose a bunch of rights when you're committing felonies against other people. But do you lose the rights forever? So my argument would be, if someone commits a violent felony and they go to prison and they've served a sentence that's likely to result in them no longer being predisposed to felony violence. And that might simply mean a long time. It might mean 20 years or 30 years. So basically they age out of violent criminal predation and they're no longer believed to be a felony danger to the community. And they're safe enough to be released from prison is basically what I'm getting at. They don't represent a threat to their community as they did before when they were convicted and sentenced. That person, I believe, ought to get all their rights back. The right to vote, the right to keep and bear arms, everything. Because that person, we would want that person to be integrated back into society. That's the best way to limit the chances of recidivism. If we basically exile that person who we believe is no longer a threat to society from society, what are they going to do but turn to crime? So that's the yes part of my response. Should felons get their guns back after they've served their time? Yes, if the time is sufficient that we can have some degree of confidence, they no longer present as a threat. They're safe enough to release from prison. And if we don't believe that, we shouldn't let them out of prison. Unfortunately, the practical answer in 2024 has to be no, because we don't keep felons in prison for a sufficient period of time because of all this wailing about over-incarceration and all this nonsense. You don't have a guy on the streets with 49 prior criminal charges, dozens of criminal charges. The entirety of his adult life is nothing but criminal charges. You don't have a guy like that out on the streets unless the system is profoundly broken and we're not holding these violent criminals accountable for their acts of violence. So if the guy's still dangerous, and look at this guy, still dangerous, If they're still dangerous, they ought not be released from prison. But if we're going to be stupid enough to release them from prison while they're dangerous, we ought to keep in our back pocket the option of putting them back in prison if we catch them with a gun, a dangerous person with a gun. So if it were Andrew's system, I would incarcerate people at a rate and for a duration of time that we could have some degree of confidence that person was no longer dangerous to the community, that we were comfortable releasing them into the public. And that person I would allow to regain the right to keep a gun and their other rights. But in this broken system where we take bad, bad dudes and just rotate them out of prison with very little time served so that they're still dangerous, bad actors. Of course, they're going to get guns anyway, right? There's no practical way to keep guns out of the hands of criminals who want them. I told my story about being able to buy guns out of the trunk of a car where they get their girlfriend to go into the gun store, buy the gun on their behalf. You can't keep guns out of their hands. But if they're a bad actor, it would be nice to have that fallback of, well, you know, we let you out of prison, even though you're still dangerous. We told you we didn't want you to have guns, and we caught you with one. And as a dangerous person, you don't have a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. So that's how I feel about that. All right, let me take a look now at the law. Well, first, let me take a look and see if anybody was silly enough to do a super chat on YouTube. $10 super chats are addressed on YouTube. I encourage people not to do that because that's one question you get answered for $10. If you become a Law Self-Defense member for 99 cents for a two-week trial at lawselfdefense.com/trial or less than $10 a month after the trial, you get all your questions answered. Let's see. Oh, there is one from the other day. And I didn't get to answer it during, I didn't see it before I closed out the YouTube stream. It was from Steven, $20 super chat. I did answer it afterwards, but I had already shut down the YouTube stream by then. So I'll answer it again here. We were talking about the Colorado Public Defender's Office and how they've made me persona non grata. They won't work with me anymore because I'm a terrible person, even though I got their client acquitted of murder, manslaughter, and reckless homicide charges for nothing. I did it pro bono because I have a certain degree of sympathy for the public defender's office. I used to work for a public defender's office. But nevertheless, they decided they didn't like me. Stephen asked, is the public defender elected or appointed? She has an untenable position. It does happen to be a woman. So just like in a prosecutor's office, there's the district attorney or the attorney general. And they're in most states, they're elected at the federal level. Obviously, the attorney general of the United States is appointed and confirmed by the Senate. But they're the dude. They're the top of the pyramid. And then below them, all the lawyers below them, who may be 30-year career lawyers for the office, they would all be ADAs, assistant district attorneys. Right? That's how that works. So at the state level, they're usually elected. And at the local level, so a statewide, like attorney general office, and then typically like a countywide or a judicial district wide election would take place for a district attorney. The public defender's offices are different. So some of them are elected. A lot of them are appointed. So in Colorado, the public defender's appointed the public defender, the tip of the pyramid. Right. Everybody else would be a deputy or an assistant public defender. But the public defender is appointed by the governor. And then I think approved by some kind of committee as well that oversees the public defender's function here in Colorado. Whether the Colorado, the public defender of Colorado has an untenable position or not depends on, you know, the politics. I was really surprised that any public defender's office would send me a nasty gram, an actual physical type letter in the mail, prioritizing their left progressive political view over the benefit and the interests of their clients. But that's what they chose to do. So, and Colorado is it's as liberal as California now in terms of governmental structure. Of course, many of the people are quite conservative, but the Democrats, the progressives, outright communists are controlling the legislature. And of course, the governor is a Democrat too. The state Supreme Court's all Democrats, or majority Democrats at least. So that's all there. All right, folks. So again, I would encourage all of you on YouTube and Rumble and Twitter to take advantage of this. LawOfSelfDefense.com/trial. 99 cents, folks, for a 2-week trial. How can you really go wrong? After that, it's still less than 10 bucks a month to be a Law of Self-Defense member. You'll be emailed instructions for joining us for the rest of this show and all our members-only content on every show. And you can join us there. But for all of you silly enough not to take advantage of this LawOfSelfDefense.com/trial opportunity, this is the end of today's show for you. If you're a Law of Self-Defense member, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back in about 20 seconds. If you're watching on YouTube, Rumble, or Twitter, this is the end of today's show for you. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. Here we go. All right, we're back. Give me just one moment. All right, so now it's just us, Law of Self-Defense members, and of course, yours truly. So let's take a look and see what we've got from the members. Okay. People are talking about moving from Maryland to San Antonio, Texas. I'm looking at San Antonio, Texas too, but it's not a top prospect for my escape from Colorado. I'm leaning towards Nashville or the maybe Northern Kentucky, maybe Florida. Let's see. The big problem I have with Florida, folks, I've lived in Florida before. I used to spend a lot of summers there when my grandparents lived down there. Worked a lot of jobs on golf courses, doing grounds maintenance, that kind of stuff when I was a kid. And I like Florida. I don't have a problem with the heat. But I like to ride motorcycles, and Florida is as flat as a table. There's not a lot of good motorcycle riding there. You got to get all the way up into like Georgia before you hit anything that looks like a hill. But we'll see. Our fundamental decision will be driven by the kids' school. Let's see. Rick asks, not related to this show, but I'm playing catch up a bit. I understand appeals require objections. Can the Baldwin lawyer's quibbling serve as grounds for an appeal? They're quibbling in these motions. Once the judge makes a ruling on a motion, of course, is a request to a court to make a decision about something. And the Alec Baldwin defense team has been filing these, kind of outrageous motions to dismiss the grand jury indictment against their client. I've read them on shows. I don't think the judge has made a formal ruling on those. And of course, the states responded with their own counter motions why the indictment should not be dismissed. At some point, the trial judge is going to make a ruling on that. I don't expect she's going to be fooled by all this hand waving by the Baldwin attorneys. So I expect she'll rule against them. And would that be a ground for appeal? Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not. So technically, anything that goes against you could be a ground of appeal. As a practical matter, rulings like this by a state court judge, especially pre-trial, they're not the kinds of things the appellate court, unless the judge were to go insane. they're not the kind of things the appellate courts are likely to review. They'd rather wait until the case goes through trial, see what kind of verdict you get. Because if you get a not guilty verdict at trial, then you don't need to appeal anything that happened pre-trial. So wait and see. Maybe Alec Baldwin, you know, insanely gets acquitted and the appellate courts wouldn't have to deal with any of this stuff. If he gets convicted, I would assume you'll see tons of appeals. The trouble is his sentence is only 18 months. So I don't think this judge is going to let him out pending appeal. We saw how she sentenced Hannah Gutierrez. And Hannah Gutierrez wasn't even pointing the gun. Let's see. Zakuza says, would have been hilarious if the homeowner came out and offered the cops one of their fully set up rifles. That's 10 times better than the ones they're using. Yeah, I've got friends who have dozens of full auto guns, dozens of them, including things like MG42s, 50 caliber M2s. And yeah, I'm sure the cops would have appreciated something like that. Let's see. Yeah, I'm trying to do the shows earlier, folks. I spent the last couple of years doing them at noon Eastern time, but there's stuff I prefer to do in the early afternoon that around midday for me, that it's a lot more convenient for me if I can do the shows at 11 a.m. Eastern time. So that's what I'm going to try to do moving forward. Let's see. Lawful to Shoot says the guy by the fence survived and continued to get up after a few minutes. Okay, fair enough. A chain link fence is regarded as the best cover. Thank you, Zakuza. Kyle says, if you have a mix of agencies, no common command. Camping is good for one, not two or more shots. Yeah. I'm surprised there's no, the radio's not the same. I mean, nothing's the same. Isn't somebody picked out as the lead? If you got a team of 12 guys, they can't all be acting independently from each other, are they? That would seem weird to me. Phil says, establish a base of fire, gain and maintain fire superiority to facilitate maneuver aggressively. If the base of fire cannot engage from a position, they move to a new position where they can support the maneuver. That makes sense to me. Of course, that's military stuff, but I mean, let's face it, these cops are basically engaged in military-like conduct. D says, what bothers me is the two on the video never checked their six. If the bad guy had maneuvered to where the lady is, they'd have been toast. Yeah, or there could be more than one bad guy, right? I mean, they actually suspected at the beginning that there was more than one bad guy. You get a second bad guy who's flanking behind you, and was it in Dallas? Dallas, five or six cops got killed a couple of 7-8 years ago. And the bad guy, they were kind of behind columns, I think, and the bad guy just flanked all the columns and just shot them one by one. John O says, failure to take adequate cover and concealment is no doubt the reason for the number of casualties and fatalities. Yeah, it has to be, right? I mean, they got shot dead. Withdraw and come back with an armored vehicle or three and heavier firepower. They did come back with at least one, it looks like a Bearcat. Zakuza says, side note, PSA is giving away a Saber 10-A1. I'll have to look at that. Rick says, it's always easy questioning decisions after the fact, for sure. That's true. Thinking tactically, knowing his history of gun infractions and failure to comply, a sniper in Overwatch would have been beneficial. The two guys in the video are pretty much pinned down. Yeah, a sniper would have been helpful. Let's see. Jeffrey says, tactics trump skill, and these were bad tactics. I think they just... So they were engaged as they were walking up to the house, and I think they hadn't planned for that. I think they were just surprised and they all dashed for whatever the nearest cover was, and then or concealment, and then they got stuck there. I think they all thought they were going to make it up to the house before they had to deal with this guy. Kyle says, I hate those early morning no-knocks, but they knew they had an armed and demonstrably dangerous individual. Yet they approached the house in the front in broad daylight, as opposed to buttoning up the block and waiting for the dude to go to the store. Yeah. Of course, if they tried to grab him going to the store and had a shootout then, and it went bad, they would have been criticized for that. Kyle says, instead, they tried to take ground that was not only familiar to the target, but without setting up a CP, isolating the block. Yeah, I think that's true. It's tough, man. The guy's in his house. That's where all the guns and ammo are. He's got interior lines of communication. He can move from one side to the house to the other side readily. Shoot from deep inside the rooms, not presenting as a very good target. That's why you need, you know, if you're trying to, take over a defended structure, you traditionally need a multiple number of guys on your side relative to the guys defending the structure. Phil says, watching a lot of police videos, I've noticed that LEOs in general are very passive and hesitant to take decisive action with a suspect. Dealing with a person in a vehicle, it's remarkable to see how often the LEO stands by while the driver or passenger are rummaging around. Well, I'll defer to the actual cops on this. I've never been a cop. But I know a lot of cops, and I know a lot of guys who, they're now retired, but they were cops their whole career. And what I've observed from the outside is that aggressive behavior is either beaten out of the cops. They're trained not to be aggressive. They're punished if they're aggressive. Or if individual cops are not punished in that way, when new cops are hired, they're not hiring for aggressive characteristics. They're not, they'd rather, like, I'll use the FBI as an example. So the guys I know who are my age, who are in the FBI for decades, a lot of them came out of combat positions. But over the next 20 years, their peers who were hired behind them came out of accounting positions. Still armed special agents, but obviously a very different mindset and worldview. As Zakuza says, lawful to shoot. I think Jocko Willink has pointed out how cops lack consistent situational training. They get it once a year. If that's another factor for sure. Phil says, with the political climate toward LEOs, they are understandably apprehensive. Yeah, we just had a trial here in Colorado, just west of Denver. I think it's Clear Creek County, where police responded to a motorist stuck on the side of the road. He had called for help, but once they got there, he was completely uncooperative. He had a bunch of knives and guns in the car. He wouldn't come out. They began to suspect a DWI or drugs or some kind of mental event happening. They called more cops to come. So there were, at one point, I think 6 or 7 police officers there, and they couldn't get this guy to comply. They tried to take him with a beanbag round that just broke out the back window. Then a cop reached in through the back window, the back door on the passenger side, to try to get into the vehicle that way. And the suspect in the car slashed at him with a knife. And another cop shot him 5 times and neutralized that threat. Well, that cop who shot 5 times, saying he shot because the other cop was getting slashed at with a knife from reaching distance, was charged with murder. And he just had his trial last week, and he was convicted of reckless homicide, which is a misdemeanor here in Colorado, only 120 days. But he wasn't acquitted of murder. The jury hung. And apparently they hung by one vote for acquittal, and the rest of the jury was ready to convict. So just this past Monday, after the verdict came in last week, last Thursday, I think, or Friday, already this past Monday, the prosecutor said, no, we're going to try him for murder again. So that'll train cops not to be particularly aggressive. Let's see. Kyle says, I had a friend at church that worked for Carrollton PD. I've been to Carrollton a number of times. I think that's where the, is that where the Dallas Pistol Club is? The Tom Gibbons does his annual conference there. And I've spoken there. I forget how many times, not every year, but every few years. Dallas Pistol Club's a nice facility, but they don't allow any long guns. Anyway, Carrollton PD, he joined the ATF, was shot in the foot at Mount Carmel. When asked how he feels about the ATF, he couldn't make eye contact with anybody. Yeah. Jeffrey says, fortunately, the cops are not passive when facing deadly acorns. Yeah, remember that guy, the cop who fired the shot when the acorn bounced off the roof of the car? I covered that in the show. It's really weird. David says tactical failures directly result from societal pressures to defund and demilitarize law enforcement agencies. We seem to be doing this weird thing simultaneously where we're militarizing the cops' equipment with, you know, full auto long guns and bear cats and stuff like that. And then we're demilitarizing their the soft skills, like the actual ability to use these tools in an aggressive way. And demilitarizing them in the sense that they're trained that if they actually use these things in an aggressive way, they'll be prosecuted and convicted. Let's see. Lawful to Shoot says, knowing violence takes a lot of experience, and until that occurs to you, you'll never know what you'll do when all hell breaks loose. Yeah. I mean, that's what training is for, right? Let's see. Will Parker. Hey, Will, how you doing, man? Will and I are going for a motorcycle trip pretty soon, in about a month, around Colorado. That's going to be great fun. Will remarks, serial killer James Mitchell de Bardelabin disguised himself as a police officer. It does happen. It just happens so rarely that no one's going to allow you to presume that person in uniform is not actually a cop. Let's see. D says, when I worked with narcotics serving no-knock warrants, I was the first unit in with lights and sirens and speaker announcing sheriff's office warrant, so the folks in the house knew it wasn't a competitor breaking in. Yeah, I would do all that too. Let's see. In my experience, a lot of law enforcement officers have a completely unrealistic perception of their ability to run a gun. And that's based largely on me seeing them in shooting classes that I've been also been allowed to attend. These are normally LEO only classes, but for whatever reason, I was able to attend. And for seeing the occasional cop show up to his, like his first IDPA match. And they don't tend to do very well. They think they will. Often they get so embarrassed by their poor performance, they never come back, which is absolutely the wrong outcome. Kyle says, probably the scariest and most consistent failure in the LEO world is their abysmal hit rate. That dude the other day, 98 shots with 11 hits. Right? That was a traffic stop, 96 shots or something. 11 hits. D says, per Tom Gibbons, training must be recent, realistic, and relevant to be effective. Yeah, and recent is important. I was going to say, I fully agree with Tom on this. There's actually almost nothing that Tom teaches. It's hard for me to think of anything on which I disagree with him. He's a very thoughtful guy, and he's looked at a lot of real facts and data and experience. But recent training is much more important than how intensive your training is. If you do like once a year, I teach at and participate in a 4-day pistol course out in the Nashville area. That's Mickey Shook's S12 event. Great event. I encourage you to Google it, S12. I don't know if I'll be there this year or not. Mickey hasn't called me about it yet, but I've done it the last few years, and I think 3 years. And it's a 4-day course. It's pretty intensive, and I think it's really good, and it really does groove in your shooting pretty well. But if that's all you do, like once a year, you'll have a high degree of skill with that pistol when you leave that class, but not 6 months later. It's much more important to your skill level how current your training is, how recent your training is, even if it's at a much lower intensity. Let's see. The trouble with Idaho is I like Idaho, like the geography of Idaho. It's very pretty country. But our key driver is top level schools for our girls. They're two very, very bright kids, and we want to maximize those opportunities for them. And it can be hard to find that level of a school in low population states. Currently I'm leaning mostly towards like the Nashville area, like Franklin. Not the city itself, of course, but outside of the city. I've got friends who live there. The gun laws are good. I mean, you know, I don't know. Is any state really safe, reliably red when they're bringing in millions of illegal immigrants that are never going to leave? They're never going to leave. So I think in the long term, it's all over. I'm just trying to find a place. You know, I don't need forever. I'll be 60 this year. Let's see. Lawful to Shoot says, if I'm not mistaken, the marshal's office takes command with multiple agencies. I would expect that to be the case. I'd want the federal, whoever the federal guy is, to take the lead and then deputize everybody to the federal level. You get the best use of force rules there for the police. Zakuza says, this 10 a.m. Central time for shows is working nice for me because I start getting ready for work in 10 minutes. All right, cool. Lawful to Shoot says, a full auto in the hands of most law enforcement is not a good thing, however. You know, I've shot a lot of full auto because, of course, I could shoot it when I was an adjunct at the 6-Hour Academy. And I have friends who have a lot of full auto guns, and they're fun to shoot. But I struggle to come up with a scenario in which, I mean, listen, if it was $100 extra for a full auto version of an AR platform, I guess I'd pay the $100. But if it's 10,000 extra, I'm not sure the juice is worth the squeeze. So it's like having a swimming pool or a pool table or a boat. Sometimes it's better to know someone who has it than to own it yourself. Lawful to Shoot says, I got my new 9mm from PSA yesterday. Did you get one of theirs? One of the PSA models that they make themselves? I've been curious about those. I'm a little worried about getting holsters for them. And the prices are great. I mean, if they're anything as reliable as a Glock, for example, and in terms of function, for what, $300, $400? That's really good. Well, let's see. yeah, the case I'm talking about, the cop defended another cop, and he did kill the suspect. And the county charged him. And now he's going to try him again. Oh yeah, I should mention. So I'm doing a motorcycle trip with Will here in Colorado in about a month. But in August, I'm doing a trip up into British Columbia, and I'll be riding through Will's neck of the woods, and I'm going to join him for a class being taught at Will's training facility by my good buddy TC Fuller, August 10th and 11th. I have a little, where's my banner for Will? Where did it go? I know I have it, but you should check that out. I'm sure it'll be a great course. I'll be working as a range manager, safety officer, I should say, for those couple days, August 10th and 11th. It's a 1-day class. They're holding it twice. I think the 10th is sold out. Oh, here it is. There we go. So there's Will's email address there, will@fmgw.com. And you can contact him about maybe attending that class, August 10th and 11th. I think only spots left are for the 11th. And you'll get to meet my buddy TC, and you get to meet Will, and you'll get to meet me. I'll be there as well. Let's see. Sorry, Will, I should have mentioned that when I still had the live streams on YouTube going. I saw that Wilson Combat just came out with a 2.0 version of their EDC X9 pistol, which is a very, very nice pistol, folks. It's a nice, very nice 9mm in a 1911 design. It's Wilson Combat, so it's it's kind of like a $3,300, SIG 365 XL. I haven't been able to convince myself to drop that kind of money on it yet. But they ran a promotion because they came out with a 2.0 version this past week, I guess. Oh, I have the email wrong for Will. Sorry, Will. Let me edit that. .net. Not .com. will@fmgw.net. Got it. So that's fixed. Let's see. You know, Jeffrey asks, on my ride to Canada, are you going to be able to meet with Ian Runkle for a show? I don't think I'm going to be able to make it to. I don't know if Ian says where he lives. I don't know if I'll be able to make it to the city he lives in, unfortunately. It's a bit out of the way. It's already going to be a pretty long trip. I'll have to see. Let's see. Will Parker says, I'm leaving the Black Hills on June 23rd or 24th, heading to Memphis, Tennessee for a conference. The lane next to me will be open if you want to take a jaunt up to Nashville. Well, email me information, Will. I'll take a look. It seems, Gene says, it seems these men lack training for these types of scenarios. If this was an actual SWAT team, I think you would have seen them move out of that situation quickly. Staying static and you can't see for sure where it's coming from, I'd rather take the chance and move. Well, a SWAT team did show up after everything went sideways. They showed up with a Bearcat and stuff. And I would like to think they handled that nobody was injured after that point. Hey, I don't own a Kel-Tec, but I've seen them work. I mean, George Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin with a Kel-Tec 9mm. All right, I think those are all the questions, folks. So, oh my gosh, we went an hour and a half. Okay, sorry. So with that out of the way, I'll just remind all of you that if you carry a gun, so you're hard to kill. That's why I carry a gun. That's why I carry a knife. That's why I carry pepper spray. That's why I study jujitsu. so that I'm hard to kill. My family is hard to kill. If you do those things so you and your family are hard to kill, you also owe it to yourself and your family to make sure you know the law so you're hard to convict as well. Until next time, and for members, I'm not sure what the schedule for the rest of the week looks like. I have a big obligation on Friday. I may do a show tomorrow. I may do a show Friday, probably not both days, but I may do a show neither. And if I don't, I apologize for that. But I'll have to see what I can do. My voice still isn't quite what it needs to be talking as much as I would like to be talking. And I'll be talking for several hours on Friday. So with that out of the way, until we meet again, I remain attorney Andrew Branca for the Law of Self-Defense. Stay safe.